Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. Today's conversation will focus on the landscape for industrial real estate, including positioning considerations, performance expectations, and the potential impacts of current U.S. trade policy and the evolution of artificial intelligence to the sector. With that, joining us for today's conversation to share some insights on these topics, glad to welcome from our partners at Ares Management, Dave Fizikas, partner and head of North American Logistics with Ares Real Estate. So with that, Dave, thank you for dropping by UBS On Air, for spending some time today with our listeners, our clients. It's nice to have you with us here on the podcast.
Dan, thank you for having me. We are incredibly grateful for the partnership with UBS broadly. So thanks for having me.
Yeah, happy to do it. And again, appreciate your time today. So to get started, as our listeners might be following real estate, Dave has been through a period of repricing, so to speak, and headlines haven't exactly been kind to the space, though beneath the surface, something interesting is happening. Valuations have reset and capital is being deployed. So while many investors, Dave, are chasing yield elsewhere, what do you think investors could be missing if overlooking real estate?
Well, thanks, Dan. Way to ease into the conversation. thank you for that. Look, there's no question that real estate values have been impacted the last 3 years, largely by the interest rate movements we've seen. I think certain sectors in particular, the underlying properties and fundamentals have continued to perform very well. So I think, unlike any other cycle that I've been through in my career, you know, we've really seen a meaningful bifurcation in performance and underlying property fundamentals and demand drivers. That's really impacted values broadly. So I think, you know, you have to look under the surface here, and sector selection, I think, really matters today more than ever. You know, as a firm and a real estate group, we've been very focused on identifying big thematic trends and shifts that will really drive demand forward in the real estate space and sector. So think about, you know, the changes in how we live and how we shop and how we work, you know, the digitization that's really happening around us, global supply chain shifts in sectors like industrial, living, self-storage, and digital infrastructures are sectors that really we focus on and really have risen to the top. You know, and then if you just take a step back, you know, private real estate has played a foundational role in portfolio construction for institutional investors for as long as I can remember. And it's really provided a few things, right? Like, one, less volatility, more diversification, and over time, it has really enhanced overall returns and performance of those investors. So, you know, I think if you, in the institutional space in the moment, we are really seeing a shift back into real estate. I think those investors have benefited from having pretty significant allocations to real estate over time, and understand that the best real estate returns really come after the time periods like we just went through. You know, I think we clearly saw this reset in values over the last 3 years, but we also saw a bottoming in values in Q2 of last year. And I think most investors recognize that we are just at this point past cyclical lows. And I think where we sit is we really believe that we are in one of the most compelling entry points into the real estate space that we've seen since the GFC. And historically, unlevered returns in commercial real estate coming out of time periods like this have averaged 13% unlevered over the 5 years preceding these type of periods. So we're really excited about the opportunity set in the moment. And we're really trying to get the message out. And if you're not invested in real estate, you really should be thinking about that today at this moment.
So, Dave, to highlight your background a bit, you've spent nearly your entire career focused on industrial real estate, including building out Ares Industrial Management into the third largest industrial owner and operator globally. So with that, Dave, can you tell us more about your platform and the importance of scale in today's environment?
I guess, you know, over the last 20 years or so, we've quietly built one of the largest industrial operating platforms globally. We now have over 600 million square feet, over 2,000 properties in the industrial space, and it really sits across North America, Europe, and Asia. And I think that gives us a very unique lens in the moment, in particular, when global supply chains are shifting very rapidly. It's been incredibly powerful for us to have visibility and direct access into global customer base to help inform our decisions. And not only that, I think, you know, the relationships we have with these customers on a regional basis has really helped us migrate them across geographies as they are really looking to scale with larger owners and landlords across geographies. Despite this global scale and footprint we have, we are very focused on remaining local in how we invest and execute in our decisions. You know, real estate very much remains a very local business. We have deep vertically integrated operating capabilities across geographies that gives us real capabilities to invest across the risk spectrum and anywhere in the capital stack to identify the best risk-adjusted returns in the moment for our investors. And at the end of the day, you know, I think what I'm most proud of is really the people. That really is what makes the platform. And I think we have incredible people with decades of experience and relationships. And most importantly, you know, they're really cycle tested. They've been through this many times, and we've continued to provide what we believe is great performance for our investors.
So, Dave, to focus in a bit on your conviction in this space, what exactly is driving your conviction in industrial real estate today?
Well, good question. Let me maybe take a step back because I'm not sure most people are familiar with this. So, you know, first, if you take a look at the NCREIF Property Index, and for those that are unaware, this is an institutional commercial real estate index that tracks historical performance of real estate sectors, right? So pretty straightforward. But it's an unlevered before fee index, and over any historical time period, 10, 20, 30, and even 40 years, the industrial sector has outperformed every other real estate sector that it tracks by a pretty wide margin. And so over pretty much any one of those time periods, industrial has exceeded 10% on an unlevered property level return over the past 20, 30, or 40 years. So just start there. So why is that? Well, a couple things, I think. If you think about, you know, industrial is less capital intensive than other real estate asset classes. These tend to be mission critical facilities for many of our customers and businesses. They benefit from triple net lease structures with contractual annual bumps in our leases. So any inflationary pressures, cost pressures really gets passed on to our tenants. But it also has modest lease terms, so roughly average 5 years, which allows owners to capture and harvest rent growth and grow NOI to drive performance over time. So very defensive in recessionary times, but also allows for the ability to capture and harvest growth in call it boom periods, right? So now maybe in the moment, industrial space, you know, in the U.S. has remained incredibly resilient. You know, our U.S. operating portfolio across the platform remains 95% leased. We continue to renew over 70% of our tenants. And when we sign new leases or renew our tenants, we continue to increase rents at over 40% higher rates than those expiring. So incredible growth in rents over time. That type of rent increases is really driving our forecast across our operating portfolio in the U.S. We're forecasting over 50% NOI growth in the next 3 years and over 90% in the next 5 years. And we believe that should continue to drive both dividend growth and performance over time. You know, maybe a little broader context as well. I think we have seen some incremental supply over the last few years. The vacancy rate stands today at about 6.5%, still below the historical average of 7, so remains very healthy. The supply picture continues to improve. New construction starts are off 70% off peak to 10-year lows. So supply is continuing to get meaningfully better and improved. And normally in a 6.5% vacancy market, we would be developing into that, and that's just not happening today. So, and then on the demand or leasing front, you know, in our portfolio in the U.S., we leased more space through June of this year than we did each of the last 2 years. We clearly did see a pause in April, incremental improvement in May, and June was the best June on record in the U.S. with over 62 million square feet leased. And then if you we just pulled the August through August numbers, right? And so through August this year in the U.S., there's been 590 million square feet of leasing, which compares to last year through August of 540 million square feet, right? So almost 10% higher than last year's numbers, despite all the volatility and certain uncertainty we've seen in the markets. You know, so I guess if you pull it all together, you know, we've seen a reset in values over the last 3 years, what we believe is an incredible entry point past cyclical lows, improving supply picture, and a real acceleration in demand. And we believe this is a really good setup for the sector for continued outperformance.
Well, thank you, Dave. A compelling thesis. Do you believe the recent tariff policies or even macro uncertainty threaten to curb this outperformance?
Well, look, there's clearly lots of uncertainty in the market post April 2nd. I think businesses have gotten more comfortable making decisions in the moment. I think, you know, we just referenced some of the leasing numbers. So I think clearly post May into June and beyond, there's been clear decision making happening and real acceleration in leasing and demand. Obviously, the trade policies continue to remain fluid, but we now have trade deals with five of our largest trading partners, representing over 70% of U.S. imports. And those tariff rates have come way down relative to where we started on April 2nd. So meaningful improvement and more incremental certainty there. You know, it feels like we are definitely past peak tariff volatility in the moment. I think the other piece that I clearly probably underestimated was the uncertainty around the lack of clarity to businesses on tax policy. So, you know, what are corporate taxes going to be? I think we saw, or we have clarity today, really early July, on the fact that corporate taxes were not going up. And incremental to that, I think the new legislation around accelerated depreciation that was also passed, I think is incredibly powerful tool for industrial space. It certainly encourages decisions and increases ROI on investment in equipment and property. And I think that is definitely helping folks make decisions in the moment. But I think, you know, a lot of these trends around global supply chain shifts really date back to the first installation of tariffs in 2018. I think a lot of people forget, like, these tariff policies really started in 2018. It perpetuated the last two administrations. And then beyond that, I think if you think about the many disruptions and shocks that businesses have had to supply chains over the years, when you think about multiple wars, ship attacks in the Red Sea, drought at the Panama Canal, COVID, all of these disruptions, you know, businesses are really focused on creating a more local, a more regional, and a more reliable supply chain. And I think a lot of these policies, really the last two administrations, continue to encourage and accelerate that desire to create more local, regional supply chains, right? And so I think we're seeing onshoring and nearshoring and e-commerce in particular, two big demand drivers for this space and sector that are both, I think, in very early innings. And maybe I can spend a few minutes just touch on each of them quickly. But our research team is tracking over $1 trillion of announced new investment in manufacturing in the U.S. This really dates back to those first installation of tariffs in 2018. And some of those facilities from that time frame, so 7 years later, are just starting to come online today. You know, this is a trend that took 40 years to migrate our manufacturing overseas. It takes a long time to migrate it back, get plants built and in production. But we are seeing that today. And I think if you think about really strategic and high value manufacturing, those are the things that are coming back. Not all manufacturing will come back to the U.S., that's for sure. But think chip manufacturing, battery manufacturing, EV, pharmaceuticals, biomed. Like, these are some of the things that we're seeing happen now in the moment and really become operational. I think what's interesting about the manufacturing relative to warehouse demand is we're estimating for each square foot of new manufacturing facilities, there's an incremental 3 to 5 times more demand for warehouse and distribution space. And we've really started to see that translate. You know, demand in the market from the manufacturing related uses has grown to about 20%. And we see that continuing to grow over time and continue to become a more meaningful driver of demand for our space and sector on a go-forward basis. The other big driver is e-commerce. And we've seen this really over the last decade in industrial. But I think a clear bit of overshoot through COVID in the e-commerce, a clear recalibration back post-COVID. And now we're through peak COVID sales and now accelerating through that. And this is really the growth sector for brick and mortar retailers and online retailers. Like, this is where all of the growth in their space and sectors coming from. We've seen a meaningful reacceleration here, and maybe I'll just give you a couple examples to kind of try and highlight this. But, you know, in July, during Amazon's Prime Day event, online and across all U.S. online sellers or retailers, we saw a 30% year-over-year increase to over $24.1 billion. Just incredible growth. And then I think when you think about the convenience of shopping online, the ease of ability to identify and have conviction and value, right? Like, when you shop online, you can see multiple price points for the same product. You have conviction in the value that you're getting. And you couple that with convenience, and I think it's fundamentally changed the way we shop. The delivery times continue to improve. That drives demand for warehouse distribution space as they get closer and closer to the population centers and more and more warehouse facilities. And so, you know, it's still very early innings in e-commerce. Only 16% of retail sales are online. That is forecasted to more than double by 2030 and grow to $1.7 trillion of online sales. So a continuing big driver for our space and sector that we've seen a real acceleration in.
Well, Dave, it was interesting to hear about those demand trends a bit earlier, and do want to run a bit further with e-commerce, just given the potential impact and thinking about the intersection with artificial intelligence, AI. How, from your perspective, Dave, is AI shaping e-commerce and industrial real estate more broadly?
Well, good question. I think if I have to be honest, I had to look to some kids and younger generation to help me understand this a bit better, but you know, over the last, call it 18 months, a lot of these online retailers have really adopted AI shopping tools. And I feel like they're still very much in their infancy. But again, in these AI shopping tools, Google Lens, Amazon's got something called Rufus. I think they're getting rolled out broadly, are really continuing to make it easier and easier to shop online and much more convenient. Again, I think it's very early in AI's integration into e-commerce, but we are seeing it really drive demand. So, you know, maybe during that Prime Day event I mentioned earlier, AI-driven traffic was up 3,300%. And what they're seeing is that these AI shopping tools is driving traffic, it's driving conversion rates upwards of 30%, and gains in profitability of upwards of 10% by showing customers really relevant products based on their browsing and purchasing history. You know, we've all seen the social media advertising, very targeted over time. We've all experienced that. You combine all of that with the conversion rates and profitability, it is really seeing lots of investment from retailers. And this is what's interesting too, is it's not just the Amazons and the Walmarts of the world that we're all familiar with here in the States, but we're now seeing companies like Shein and Temu and TikTok Shopping, who had the benefit of being able to ship into the U.S. under the $800 de minimis exemption for tariffs, now take meaningful space in the U.S. with that exemption lift or eliminated, right? And again, that was probably something that I didn't see as an outcome here. But each of those platforms are growing U.S. customers by double digits year over year. And we continue to see them drive much more demand online as well. So I think you can really see and understand why industrial remains one of our highest conviction sectors. These drivers from e-commerce to onshoring, nearshoring are long-term secular tailwinds that we think will continue on for decades and really drive performance for the space sector.
Well, Dave, very generous with your time today. Great speaking with you. Thank you for dropping by UBS On Air and spending the time with our listeners, our clients, to lay out the investment case for the industrial real estate landscape, hitting on trends, performance expectations, and considerations when it comes to positioning within a very interesting space. So do look forward at some point perhaps having a follow-up conversation, though. Thank you, Dave, again for your time today.
Dan, thank you. Appreciate it and happy to do it. So have a great day.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Financial Services, Inc. does not provide legal or tax advice, and this does not constitute such advice. UBS strongly recommends that persons obtain appropriate independent legal, tax, and other professional advice. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients, UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG, member FINRA SIPC. Aries believes the real estate market reached a bottom in values for the current cycle as of September 23, 2025. However, there is no guarantee that values cannot go lower at any time. This presentation is for informational purposes only and is not investment advice and is neither an offer to sell nor a solicitation to purchase any related securities. Investing in private markets and real estate investments involves a high degree of risk, including but not limited to risk of substantial loss of principal. Financial advisors must carefully consider the risks and other suitability details in determining appropriate investments for their individual clients' portfolios. Data contained herein from third-party providers is obtained from what are considered reliable sources. However, its accuracy, completeness, or reliability cannot be guaranteed. These materials must contain forward-looking information that is not purely historical in nature, and such information is based upon certain assumptions about future events or conditions and is intended only to illustrate hypothetical results under those assumptions.